From NPR News, this is Weekends on All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. Here's a story some economists call a cautionary tale. In 1936, President Franklin Roosevelt was running for a second term. Now, when he came into office in 1933, more than one out of every five working-age Americans were unemployed. But by 1936, he more than halved the unemployment rate, and he did it through the massive government spending plan known as the New Deal. At the same time, he introduced new banking and corporate regulations that angered big business, which in turn accused Roosevelt of trampling on free enterprise. And in that year, 1936, Roosevelt decided to embrace that opposition, even wear it as a badge of honor, during his acceptance speech at the Democratic Convention at Madison Square Garden in New York.
We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism.
He read the temper of the times correctly.
That's Donald Ritchie, the official historian for the U.S. Senate, who's written about FDR.
People didn't think very much of the bankers and the businessmen because they felt they had gotten them into the Depression in the first place. So his speeches in 1936, they take a very strong anti-business tone.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
Now, this tone worked for Roosevelt. He was reelected in a landslide. And by the time he was inaugurated in January 1937, the unemployment rate was down to around 9%, a dramatic drop. And it looked like the Depression was finally winding down.
People felt that there was momentum and that finally there was the light at the end of the tunnel. And so Roosevelt and a lot of his advisors felt this was the time now to move away from deficit spending, which they'd done for 4 years, to try to balance the budget and to try to let the economy stand on its own 2 feet.
And no one pushed harder for this than Henry Morgenthau. He was Roosevelt's Treasury Secretary, and he also had close ties to Wall Street. And Morgenthau was worried about growing debt and deficits. And since the economy was turning a corner anyway, he pushed Roosevelt to take austerity measures, to cut back.
And there was a lot of support in Congress from that. You know, the congressional committee chairmen were mostly Southern Democrats who were more conservative than Roosevelt was, and they were encouraging Roosevelt to cut back on spending and to balance the budget. There were people in Roosevelt's administration who were arguing just the opposite, of course. There were ones saying, no, wait, you can't take away the props from the economy yet. We need more government spending. But Roosevelt listened to the budget balancer.
So for the next 2 years, Roosevelt introduced new taxes and slashed government spending by 17%. And then,
all of a sudden, after unemployment had been going steadily down, unemployment shot up. The economy stagnated. The stock market crashed again. And now it seemed that we'd come out of the Hoover Depression to go into the Roosevelt Recession.
Our cover story today, lessons from 1937. As the debt ceiling talks between the White House and congressional Republicans drag on and on, both Democrats and Republicans seem to agree that economic austerity in some form is going to have to happen. President Obama wants to cut spending by $4 trillion over the next decade. Republicans say they want to see dramatic cuts happen over the next year. But could either of those proposals take us right back into recession? Here's Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary, who was the top economic advisor to President Obama.
I just wrote an op-ed in which I urged the importance of continuing unemployment insurance, more infrastructure investment. I do think that it's important to recognize that most of what's under discussion in the budget talks is commitments today with respect to budget deficit reduction 3 and 5 and 10 years from now. Committing now to future deficit reduction is a sound thing to do. Rushing to deficit reduction was Roosevelt's mistake in 1937, and that would be a serious mistake today.
Essentially, what you're saying, and I'm just using simple language here, is that there ought to be more stimulus right now.
The right strategy is more stimulus now and more deficit reduction programmed for after the economy has recovered.
But many of the things that you're talking about are being done as we speak. The payroll tax, the extension of unemployment benefits, aid to states. And yet the unemployment rate, as you know, just hit 9.2%. So what's the problem? Why isn't it working?
Well, aid to state and local governments is phasing out. The unemployment insurance is phasing out. And it is working in the sense, and this doesn't give people as much satisfaction as they want to have, quite rightly, it is working in the sense that without that support for the economy, things would have been much worse.
You were, of course, had a seat at the table under two presidents, including this president, Obama. But essentially what I'm hearing is that you believe there needs to be an additional injection of cash into the economy. You know the politics. You know how complicated that is. What is feasible, in your view, given the current political atmosphere?
What's possible? We saw a positive example at the end of last year when the president and the Congress came together to extend tax cuts another 2 years, which put more money into consumers' pockets. I'd like to see that payroll tax cut extended for another year. Unemployment insurance is expected to expire at the end of this year. That's a serious mistake while we have 9% unemployment. I think that's an important idea that should be recognized right now as well.
Do you think the administration did enough? In other words, why does it seem as if this recovery really isn't much of a recovery at all?
The recovery has been slow. If the politics had permitted a larger approach, if the proposals that the president put forward in the fall of 2009 and that the House of Representatives acted on to support infrastructure investment, to incentivize hiring, if those measures had passed, then we clearly would be in a better position today, but those were blocked in the Senate. But there's no question that it's going to be important for the president to put the jobs deficit as our top economic issue until we've return to normal levels of employment.
Larry Summers, we talked to a lot of economists on this program, Nobel Prize winners and others. I often ask them this question, and I want to put it to you. How long is this crisis going to last? When do you believe the U.S. economy will be back to where it should be?
Oh, I think we're still several years away. We say that in a technical sense, the recession is over. That means that the economy is growing. But when you walk through the Grand Canyon, you're going uphill long before you get back to sea level. And I think we've got several years before this economy's back to normal levels of employment.
That's former Treasury Secretary and White House Economic Advisor Larry Summers. He spoke to me from Massachusetts. Larry Summers, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, in the years leading up to the recession, journalist Gillian Tett was one of the first people to warn that something new and dangerous was happening in the global credit market, and she predicted the collapse. Many in the financial industry had dismissed her warnings. Today, she's the U.S. managing editor for the Financial Times, and her background? It's not in finance, but in anthropology, which is one reason, she says, economists like Larry Summers aren't the only people with the answers.
Because right now, issues like, say, social cohesion are crucial for understanding what's going on. Something has always struck me about America by comparison with a country like Japan, where I used to live, is that America is not a country which has a very strong sense of resource constraint. It was created by pioneers who came here believing that there would always be more resources, precisely because they were pioneers. And there's been such a focus on growing the economic pie that people haven't really stopped to ask, how do you divide up that economic pie? And now, for perhaps the first time in American history, maybe that pie is not going to always keep growing. And yet politicians are avoiding talking about that fundamental issue, partly because there simply isn't the cultural mechanism in place to talk about it.
Gillian, from a European perspective, and we'll just for a moment forget that there are also major problems in Europe, but how is this debt ceiling issue being viewed overseas? I mean, do people look at the debate happening in Washington and think, what's going on there?
Well, the grim reality is that the situation in the Eurozone right now is so bad that most people can barely see beyond their own crisis.
Yeah.
But if they are looking to the US, what I hear European policymakers and investors saying is they find it quite unbelievable that a country would, in a sense, choose to walk into a debt crisis, particularly given that people in Europe are having a debt crisis imposed on them without choice, and they know how bad it is. there is a sense of incomprehension that the politicians can't sit around the table and come up with some kind of proactive plan. There's a fascinating contrast between the fact you have many fantastic American companies today, which are frankly awesome in terms of how they're run, how they execute plans, their vision. And there are parts of the American government today which are like that, but the political system is extraordinarily inept. And frankly, a lot of time and a lot of resources is being wasted today. And more importantly, America, sadly, is failing to get to grips with some of its really crucial issues going forward.
Larry Summers told us just a few moments ago that this crisis is going to last at least a few more years. A pretty sobering prediction from him.
It's a very sobering prediction, and it makes the question of social cohesion and the question of whether America has a way of allocating pain while also ensuring that people pull together even more pertinent. Because the fact is that social divisions have been widening, tribalism has been growing here in America, and income inequality has also been increasing. And that is going to create more and more tensions going forward. And, you know, I love America. I think it's got so much to be proud of. I just really hope that it finds a way to tackle these problems, but also, above all else, do so in a way that ensures that everyone continues to buy into the system.
That's Gillian Tett. She's the U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times. Gillian Tett, thank you.
Thank you.